I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast. This episode is part of our series about the path to Chief Product Officer. It is part of a group of supplementary interviews with people who directly participate in the selection of CPOs and influence their performance in the role. The Path to CPO podcast series has primarily focused on the journeys of 9 women CPOs to the C-suite. This supplemental interview takes us behind the scenes of the executive recruiting process from the CEO's perspective. It provides insight into the thought processes behind the decisions and the challenges throughout. Ted Krantz is the Chief Executive Officer at Data.ai. Previously, he was Chief Revenue Officer at Sky and VP Sales at C3.ai. Ted has an MBA from the University of Texas at Dallas. We were connected to Ted by Kataki Rao, who was successfully recruited to Data.ai as their CPO. Our interview with Kataki was released on June 28th. In his role as CEO of Data.ai, Ted has worked with 2 outstanding women product leaders as his chief product officer. We wanted to learn more about Ted's experience hiring product leaders and his commitment to diversity at the C-level. Ted is interviewed by Rashmi Ramesh, who has been our interviewer throughout the series. Rashmi is a member of the Women in Product community. I'll let Rashmi and Ted take it from here.
Thank you so much for your time, Ted. And first of all, welcome to Women in Product. And we will probably take you down your memory lane during the time where you were recruiting or hiring for a chief product officer position at data.ai. So we'll probably do a little dig in there, to understand more. I think basically we've been talking to many chief product officers, and we also wanted to get a view from a CEO perspective to see what they thought about the hiring and why did they need a chief product officer, and kind of talking around that part. Mm-hmm. So let me first get started with, what was the need for data.ai to actually have a chief product officer, and why not a VP of product, for example, for that role?
Yeah, no, it would be inappropriate for our scale, right? We're approaching 150 million. At the time that we had the rec open, we were still probably, well north of 100 million. So at that level, you need somebody that is a peer to the chief revenue officer, to the CFO, and it's a scaled global organization. So a VP of product would not be appropriate. I don't think it would be able to function at the E-team level. It just in terms of even competencies, experience, the way they're thinking about what we're trying to accomplish, that would really need to be minus one. So that wasn't even a consideration.
Got it. And did you actually think about grooming someone internally versus an external hire? What were your thoughts around that?
Yes, we do that quite substantially as a company. We did that with the revenue leader. We did that with the finance leader. We have a well-established reputation of promoting from within. So that was a consideration. In this particular scenario, that just wasn't an option. We didn't have somebody at the VP level that we thought was appropriate to take us to the next level as a CPO. So we did an external search.
Got it. And just piggybacking a little bit on the things that you mentioned. So VP of product versus chief product officer, according to you, what really was this charter? Could you probably take us a little more deeper into the charter for a chief product officer?
Yeah, kind of going back to where you started, why CPO versus VP. First, not just the scale and complexity of the business, we're a data provider, but the CPO role has grown, right, over the years. There's a lot of opportunities in terms of product-led growth. There's data aspects of what we do. There's the visualization of the product. There's particular lines within the product that need to kind of stand on their own merit. So it's a broad platform play and a combination of products that ultimately deliver what we package as our intelligence product. So the complexity and number of direct reports underneath the scope of the product, and then getting back to the data derivative side of this as well, there's a pretty hardcore engineering element to our product role as well that would be even a step beyond traditional SaaS. So we needed somebody technical too.
While you started interviewing the candidates, did some of the definition change with respect to what you wanted in a chief product officer?
Well, you know, we started off with an open mind. I would say that, yes, it did change a little bit, maybe 2-3 months into the search, in that when we really went after a hardcore experienced CPO, there were limitations that we saw in the market in terms of availability of talent, right? The supply and demand equation, especially at that time, was highly compromised, right? There were a lot more openings than there were great candidates. And looks that we had from the experienced CPOs didn't seem to be a great fit for us in terms of really hitting the dimensions of technical, the scope of the role that I described. And then also from, you know, just a team composition standpoint, working, we really try to work as a first team. So it's the Lencioni principles of first team. We really try to drive a lot of collaboration at the executive team level and working with peers, working obviously closely with sales, marketing, the front office functions. That was an important component too. So we started to, I would say after 2 or 3 months, be a little disappointed in terms of some of the candidates that we were interviewing, and made a decision essentially to open it up. You went back, can we promote somebody from within? Well, I actually thought about promoting somebody from external, actually. So I'm a little bit in the gray lane here in terms of the way you're structuring the questions, but I looked for an up-and-comer, made a commitment that I want somebody that's probably at the VP level or a senior level, lots of experience, but hasn't gotten to the next level. And then the other component too, that is also a Lencioni principle, is the humble, hungry, smart. If there's one dynamic that was really important to me that we hold to here at Data AI, it's hungry. You can't compensate for a hungry executive, somebody that really wants it. And in our particular case, Kitaki really wanted it. She was very hungry for that next level. It showed in the interview. And so that element was incredibly important to us. And then there were other elements that we looked at in terms of the profile as well to make sure we have the right fit.
Absolutely. I think we had a blast, and it was such an inspiring talk listening to Kitaki and her journey. It was mind-blowing, I would say.
Cool.
Going back to, or looking at taking a one step backward, I think you touched upon this a little bit. Some of the challenges that you faced while recruiting for a CPO position, I know you mentioned about the supply demand, the scarcity, and a combination of this technical skills along with scaling. Anything else you want to add, and especially the challenges that you faced when you wanted to hire a female CPO?
Sure. Well, I'll start with the, like, kind of the aggregate challenges at first. A lot of times when you're talking to CPOs, the humility is lost. There's a great deal of ego in the more experienced CPO candidate pool, I would say, to a point of underestimating what we have to do, perhaps being a bit difficult to get along with. We really want the harmony. If we're going to run first team, we're not running hub and spoke. The vast majority of tech companies still run hub and spoke. Everything comes to the CEO, right? And that's not how we're going to run it. We're going to run it with them offering up the ideas. I'll weigh in when we need to, but they should be able to solve 80% of what we need to accomplish objectively on their own, right? And that's why they have the C title.
Yeah.
So I do think that ego definitely was an issue. Coming across as difficult to work with was a common theme that we saw. And so we really put a lot of weight on someone that's going to bring a teamwork, collaboration, positive attitude, can do. And the big one that was really important is customer centric, right? You'd be surprised how many experienced CPOs have probably just grown a bit tired of the energy and effort it takes to develop relationships with the field, develop relationships with the customers, to care about the customer, right? This isn't a B2C product. It's a B2B serving B2C. And you have to really understand the customer and have a natural delight in terms of interacting with them, spending time with them, understanding and caring about the customer. And so that was a really important component for us as well. Now, on the female side, I'm sure it doesn't surprise you at all, Rashimi, that the candidate pool for female CPOs is a very narrow lane. I was shocked how narrow it was, actually, in the recruiting process. It was extremely hard to find.
Got it. And so you must have basically, obviously, spoken to both male and female candidates, even though the pool of the female candidates has been really small,
which is
definitely not surprising. But how different was your experience across these two? I know you mentioned about the humility part, but really, how different was the experience?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I can be as black and white to make it male and female, but more of the characteristics in terms of, you know, what we saw in particular with Kotaki that jumped out was the collaboration, the teamwork, the spirit, the hunger for the job. Like I said, you can't underestimate that at all. That's just so important in terms of how bad do you want it? So that jumped out. She's got incredible skills. And the other thing that we really decided that we wanted as well, based on past experiences of what worked and what didn't work, we wanted a great listener. We wanted balance. And we wanted the ability to collaborate. So we intentionally put into our case studies and reviews a lot of curveballs to throw candidates off, to move them from slide 2 that they're on to slide 23. How do you handle that? Are you going to be one of those people that like, well, I'll get to that. Let me stay here and keep continuing. Like that was a red flag to us in terms of especially running first team, because you're going to get interrupted. You're going to need to be able to be moved around. So watching how someone reacts to being moved around was something that we put a lot of weight on. And Kotaki handled that incredibly well. And I would say in some cases, the other candidates didn't handle that well at all. And my background prior to running the company for the last 5 years, I grew up through the sales ranks, right? And to me, this was a big component, because when you're talking to customers, they're going to interrupt you. They're going to move you. How well do you adapt to that is really critical in terms of taking care of customers. So in terms of taking care of us and ultimately customers, we put a lot of weight there. And she was a shining star there. We intentionally did that during the interview process.
Got it. That's such an amazing insight right there. So were there some of the must-have qualities like during the candidate selection process? I know you talked about hunger as one of the things that was not compromisable. Any others that you wanted to add from a must-have perspective? And what were the ones that you could possibly compromise on?
Well, the hard skills were pretty black and white. I really needed to have a product leader that had technical competencies as well as the product experience. So a combination of engineering and product was definitely something that we put into the rec that was an immovable object. So that limits some of the candidate pool there. The other component is we wanted entrepreneurial experience, but with a base of large enterprise SaaS experience. We wanted both of those components too, so that you have the element of leveraging scale, but you also understand that you have some limitations in an entrepreneurial lane. And, you know, you got to figure out that right combination of what works and what doesn't. But we wanted the baseline of both large company, small company, mixed pedigree, engineering, product. Those hard skills were absolutely critical. Data was another important component. And it didn't have to be market data like we had, the first party data. Some of the elements, in particular with Kotaki, with Salesforce and the marketing cloud, had a lot of, you know, tangibles that were specifically tied to the vision of the company in terms of where we were going, so that we can integrate your data with market data. So that was a big element that we put in there as a hard requirement. You had to have very good data and, let's say, analytics experience. So those are probably the four or five primary points that, you know, we were not going to negotiate on in terms of hard skills. Now, the soft skills: hunger, flexibility, team collaboration, good team player, watch, you know, for the ego or the brilliant jerk in kind of Netflix parlance, for, you know, red flags during the process. Those soft skills in terms of how you work, we put a great deal of weight on as well. Now, that was a little less tangible and a little kind of watch how it goes, but that was equally important to us.
Got it. Thank you for that insight. And you touched upon this a little bit on your background perspective, that being able to be that listener and kind of be able to handle the conversations, especially when you've been moving from one place to the other.
Yeah.
Were there any other aspects based on your background that actually helped in identifying the right candidate for this position?
Well, we had made a change on the product side, and I had to plunge deep into product. We had a consultant, Yardley Pohl, at the time, who is also another female CPO, and I worked extremely well with her, enjoyed her time with us. It was, you know, two or three quarters of kind of taking product over, but so I was really able to get into the details of what's working and what isn't working with product so that we could figure out the right profile. And one of the things that jumped out to me for sure is we were probably running a little too extreme and kind of let's describe it as a Peter Thiel 0 to 1 kind of motion in an extreme fashion, like to the point where we almost felt like we knew better than our customers. We knew better than industry consultants. There was a particular product that we were building and we were leveraging an industry expert for that product. And I found it fascinating. The team, while they said they were collaborating with the industry expert, when I looked at the final PRD, we weren't.
Mm.
We had a real bias, a confirmation bias about what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it to the point where it defied logic. There was an expert telling us clearly there were some things that we were missing on the fundamentals. And when I'm listening to the readout, I could tell he was right.
Mm.
So that to me, going back to listening and collaborating, emphasized that point because I saw us a little bit in this very kind of scary place of being disillusioned with how much we thought we knew versus how good of a listener are we, and then apply our skills, right? So yeah, that confirmation bias, you know, that ego and kind of, you know, distorting reality, you know, unintentionally,
right?
Ego getting in the way of building a great product based on what you hear. I think that much like even the sales profession, a great CPO has two ears and one mouth. And I think that I saw a lot of drop balls in terms of our ability to collaborate to get it right.
Oh, that's really humble of you to share that story with us. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. And talking about this whole process of really being able to understand the need for the CPO, source the candidates, interview them, and finally offer stage, what kind of seems to be the hardest phase based on your experience that you went through?
Just in the interview process itself?
Yeah, the whole process of being able to vet this out.
I think the onboarding process is actually much harder than the interview process.
Interesting.
I don't know if you want to get into that or not, but on the interview process, I think the hardest is ultimately making the decision on where you're going to go with, because it's such a key hire. And for us, the ramp here is substantial. You can have a vast amount of experience on the SaaS side, but the combination of enterprise SaaS, full-blown analytics, a major AI emphasis, right, as a data provider, and the core data skills, that's a big, you know, area for any one person to feel competent on. So trying to, triage all of that to make sure that there's enough depth in all those areas was probably the most difficult part.
Got it. And I would love to hear about the onboarding process that you just mentioned about. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the more interesting part because as I said, you know, I'm doing a little bit of a hybrid. It's not so much promote from within, VP level, build them up or go hire a CPO. I actually hired externally and developed and knew that I was going to develop. And so there was a lot of coaching in the first year, right? Because it's a first-time CPO.
Mm.
And so that definitely has a little bit of a gambling mentality and a ramp period that is probably pretty substantial. And so it's, you know, 2-3 really a full year of break-in for that role if you're going to do something external like we did there. And so I think, you know, the dynamics for that are pretty complex, right? We had a full rebuild on the team. So we had to rebuild essentially the entire product leadership team from scratch, right? So that was one element, an intense focus on recruiting. We've got most of those hires right. Not all of them. We got most of them right. I do think there were some good lessons learned on, you know, cutting where, you know, we have to quickly if the fit is not there, most notably on the culture side, going back to even the profile we had with Kotaki, where we failed with -1 and -2 leadership, you know, openings within Kotaki's org. It was typically in the, you know, kind of the ego or brilliant jerk kind of scenario. And it wasn't a good fit for us, even if some of the skills were there. We just didn't have the collaboration. This product requires so much intense collaboration with the field as well with customers. So anyone that's kind of from especially a B2C kind of profile, they're going to struggle, right? They're not going to have all the answers. They're not going to just be able to be left alone and go work on something and kick it out and it's going to be brilliant. That's just not how it works. So I think the recruitment piece was, you know, an intense ramp and to try to get everything right, learning the partnering with the engineering organization, the partnering with the AI organization, right? The data science team that is top shelf. So that trilogy of the PTG leadership, getting familiar with that, the intricacies of high quality product, the data orientation and building out the vision, all of those competencies took a great deal of time. On the soft skills side, right? First time CPO, especially when it comes to managing up board level, how to communicate at that level, right? There's often a tendency to, you know, probably not have the best listen talk ratio when you're promoting. There's a different element of being able to net it out. And just like on the product side, building something that's clean, you know, on the UX side is actually much harder, right?
Right.
And the same goes with the communication side. Can you net it out? Can you have balanced conversations? Get in and get out in 30 seconds, right? The first 30 seconds, green. 45 seconds is yellow. If you're talking for a minute, it's red, like at a board level. That you've got to have those skills down pretty pat to get in and get out. And that was definitely a break-in period for us. Anyone that's been at the mid, you know, to senior level at large companies, sometimes their skills for this are not very good.
No, that's an amazing parallel you drew between the two. Thank you for that insight. Fast forward, looking ahead, do you think the charter for the CPO might change in the future? And if so, how do you think it might?
Yeah, I think in general, for us or in general?
In general, like based on your observations and, you know, based on the things that you see.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it goes right to this core issue that in this world, in terms of the full commercial go-to-market, if you don't have product virality, if you don't have product-led growth, something that's contagious, sticky, it's going to be incredibly hard to scale and grow. So for us, the free-to-pay journey is a critical component for that. Not every software solution will come up with a, you know, perhaps a great free-to-pay journey, but you got to figure out the virality. You got to figure out a way to make the product sticky, contagious. Slack is probably the example that everybody goes to. It's a recent product virality, right? They didn't even have salespeople for quite some time. They really just built it on customer success and word of mouth and reputation, right? That's ultimately where the game will go. Because it's getting harder and harder to develop a kind of a big play, heavy arsenal, sales go to market with a lot of heavy lifting. You're going to struggle that way. So I think getting the CPO that understands how to drive virality is, I think, here to stay and the primary job of a CPO.
Got it. No, that's such an amazing insight there. Thank you so much for sharing. And if you had a magic wand, like what would you want to change regarding the search for the CPO based on your experience?
Well, I wish there were more, you know, diversified talent in the market. I am a believer too. We didn't talk about this because we're talking so specifically about the CPO role, but I think at the executive team, I'm a big believer in the most diversity that you can bring to the table, the better you will be. The background, the everything, every dimension of diversification is, I think, important. Some really experienced, some less experienced, right? Just any element of diversity, I think, will actually outperform in a collective IQ realm. And that's how we really run, right? It's the greater good will, 1 + 1 = 3 will come from, you know, the orchestration of the E team, not one brilliant mind. So I think if, you know, going back through the interview process, anything that we could change, it would be probably putting a little bit more emphasis on that reality of product-led growth, virality, maybe a little more testing on the creativity side there. I think that based on where the market's going, that's probably something that everybody's going to need to do. The other thing too for us is the integration of everything that we do is artificial intelligence based. We're in a predictive AI path now, but really making sure that, you know, the skills and competencies on the data science side of the equation are there too. Mm. And we got pretty fortunate with Kotaki that that worked. But I think where the market is going, AI is going to be the catalyst for the next big tech boom. When that comes, I don't know. If we have a, you know, downturn here in 2023, I think that's pretty likely, or at least more likely than not that we do. But at some point it'll turn around, and I think it'll turn around pretty quickly. But AI will be that catalyst back. And I think any, you know, thoughts I could give to potential product leaders is really dig into data science. You're going to have a difficult time staying in the seat as CPO if you don't have strong data science skills.
Got it. No, that's an amazing tip. Thank you. And any other advice you would give to other CEOs who are looking to hire a chief product officer?
Yeah, I would say that when you look at the market and where we're at as a tech industry, we should be pretty embarrassed about the diversification of this role. I would say even in terms of my lineage on the sales side, it's actually a lot better in terms of the diversification for sales leadership. Product leadership, we have to develop more female product leaders. I think what I've seen in terms of the balance provided, the chemistry with the team, adding that element of diversification has done nothing but improve the company, the perspective. I would also say that, you know, in terms of working with CPOs, I have frankly, of the two CPOs I've worked with, Yardley and Kotaki, those are the only two CPOs in my entire career that I've worked with that are female. I've hired both of them. And I would say that the enjoying the ride with both of them has exceeded expectations. They've been nothing but a delight, less drama, more care and compassion, not just for the product, what we're trying to achieve on the vision, the team, right? There's an element of nurturing and developing that I've seen with both of them, and a real positive, contagious attitude that, you know, at least for me, in terms of the two that I've worked with, that has been something that I did not expect. It's been less friction, more fun, more bold thinking, and frankly, out executing some of the more experienced product leaders we've worked with.
That's amazing. I don't know how Kotaki will actually react when she listens to this one. Probably she already knows, but yes, this is fantastic. And anything else you want to add, Ted, apart from, you know, the things that we've talked? I know we focused on a specific angle, but anything else you want to add?
No, I feel like we pretty much covered, you know, right territory and, you know, dimensions. But we're very fortunate to have Kotaki. We were very fortunate to have Yardley. My orientation for product leaders is forever changed as a result of their, you know, their input on me. And what I've seen from them. And so I'm a big believer. I'd love to see more female CPOs, and the rest of my peer group should step up, take some challenges, because I think maybe the only thing to add would be, if you're going to do it based on what I see in the market, you're going to have to make a conscious effort and kind of sign up for developing a CPO. I don't think that there's enough experienced female CPOs out there. So you got to kind of come to it with that mentality. But I think we should do more of that. I certainly have enjoyed doing that. And I think everybody is rewarded as a result of that. Being a great coach is a big part of being a CPO.
So I've got a question for you. Given the situation with the pipeline, you have an interest in seeing more women that are qualified, and we do too. So what are the like one or two things that you think women need to focus on in their careers in order to be better prepared to step into that role and be more qualified for it?
Well, on the hard skills side, like I said, I think it's virality, product-led growth. It's the AI component being very heavy, having real technical chops on the DS side. I think that's the right combination of hard skills from a core product competency perspective. Try to manage bigger teams, right? Try to touch as much of the product lifecycle as you can. Understand also the go-to-market, right? It's the old days of kind of inbound product and outbound product are getting a little bit more blurry unless you're with massive SaaS companies, but you have to have the outbound skills, I think is another component here. Being able to listen to the customer, care about the customer. I do think there's a distinction between B2C and B2B. Pick a lane. They're very different. They're right. Very different. So, and in some cases, parts of our org, we actually want some of the B2C elements, especially on the free-to-pay journey. But as a CPO, if the company is selling a B2B2C path, you should probably come with an enterprise B2B pedigree and not try to cross lanes so much. Those are the hard skills. On the soft skills, which I actually think are more important, show that you're hungry. Raise your hand. Ask to take on more, right? Stand, you know, firmly in terms of having the right voice at the company. I see a lot of cases where female executives can be a little bit more on the sidelines. Don't allow that, right? Go for it a little bit. Be bold. You get talked over, talk back over, like whatever it takes to get into the conversation and stay in the conversation. But I can tell you, at least in terms of, you know, being the CEO, if you see the hunger combined with the skills, you're going to grow people. If it's a healthy organization that really does care about winning and caring about you, that combination right there is all you need. You will get selected. You'll get pulled out if you can demonstrate that.
It's interesting that you took a chance on somebody, because in talking to quite a few different recruiters, they tend to lean the opposite way, which is like, well, people want somebody who's done this, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's frankly sad, because that will never change this dynamic. Because if you just come into it that blank and black and white and say, I just want the pedigree and experience, I'm telling you right now, you probably know the ratios better than I do. But I would say I had to fight like an animal to find women candidates. I mean, I had to go pull. It was that difficult.
One other little question I want to be sensitive to your time, but you talked about this onboarding process and how intense that was.
Yeah.
When in that process did you get to the point where like, yeah, I made the right choice?
Well, you test that constantly, right? Really do. You test that almost every week, and it ebbs and it flows. Were there moments where like, oh boy, this is going to be a lot of coaching. We have to really lean into this and develop. Absolutely. Especially when it came to the board dynamics, managing up the kind of the top-down element, the core execution, that was much easier because those skills were already there and she's deep. But that element of being at the executive seat, the perspective, the stakes, the conversation, all of that's a long ride. I'd say it's a full year before she would even say she was fully ramped. It was a year. Maybe one thing too, just on a point of empathy, if I put myself as a female wanting to become CPO, even if they've got a lot of experience as a product leader, I would say the other thing too, you know, look for someone that really does coach and develop, right? On the other side of the equation, not just in terms of what we're looking at, but if I were them, I would look for that as well. Are they promoting from within? Are there growth opportunities internally and externally that are pretty consistent culturally? That might be another thing to weed opportunities out pretty quickly as well.
Yeah, that's great.
That's a great one.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Rashmi, such an interesting conversation with Ted. One of the things that I love about this interview is Ted's commitment to diversity, how he really saw the value and embraced the benefits of it. Any tidbits from that interview that you'd like to share?
Yeah, Ted had an incredible clarity in this interview, from discussing the reasons behind hiring a CPO, whether internally or externally, to the importance of grooming talent. Ted's perspectives were influenced by his diverse background, paying very close attention to what works and what doesn't in the company, the market conditions and trends, and ultimately a strong belief in the power of diversity. His emphasis on humility and listening skills at the executive level underscored the essential qualities of a successful CPO. And you know, one surprising revelation from the interview was that many of the CPOs he spoke to had grown somewhat fatigued by the energy required to really build those relationships with the field and customers. And I will conclude with his own words: 1 + 1 = 3 will only come from the orchestration of the team and just not one brilliant mind.
Such a great line from Ted. But before we go, I want to talk briefly about an online event that Women in Product will be hosting on Tuesday, September 26th from noon to 1 Pacific time. It's a kickoff event to provide a taste of our new AI Product Management 101 workshop series. This series is a direct response to what our community has asked for and includes top women in AI providing guidance on what it takes to become an AI PM. The workshop series is a great way to learn the skills, tools, and frameworks to build and manage AI products. We hope you'll join us for that online event and the next episode as we wrap up our series on the path to CPO. Thank you for listening, and thanks also to our partner, Discover Card, who provides annual support for the work of Women in Product and our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review so that others can discover us, or share this podcast with people you know. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests, you can reach us at podcast@womenpm.org.